Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tsar Power. Aurora here. You can join us over at Intelligent Speech Online on February 28th. This year's theme is Companions and Rivals. Intelligent Speech is a veritable three-ring circus of content composed of four virtual rooms running simultaneous 40-minute sessions. These sessions include esteemed keynotes such as Totalis Rankium, The History of Persia, and The Alternate Historians, fascinating and thoughtful creator presentations such as by us about Laika and the Russian space pet program, or lively roundtable discussions, followed by a Q&A with the audience. These Q&As, together with space and time for separate chats, create a unique experience in which members of the community can engage directly with the creators they follow. Your ticket not only includes live attendance, but also access to recordings of all the sessions after the event to rewatch or re-listen to at your leisure. Tickets are available now at intelligentspeechonline.com. Use the code TSAR, T-S-A-R, for a 10% discount. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to Tsar Power to our fellow patrons. We know it's been quite a while, but we're back because I am no longer traveling intensively for work. But to ease ourselves back in, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. But before I continue, Brendan, you are here in person with me in my room. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Yes, I am appearing in person, so if I sound a little weird, that's the reason.
Because we are using one microphone. Because guess what? We're both hanging out together.
And also, I didn't want to bother bringing my setup and my car for driving 2 hours. Because Roberto said it was okay.
We will figure it out. So if it sounds kind of off, it's because we're in person. That's it. But today we're going to be bringing you our review on the movie Major Grom. Chumnoi Doctor, or Plague Doctor. Or the movie in Russian is Major Grom, Chumnoi Doctor, which just means Major Grom. Mm-hmm. Plague Doctor. I've said that 3 times now, but whatever.
Yeah. And disclaimer, all cops are bastards includes Major Grom.
we'll see what the Russian media has to say about all cops being bad, or all cops are pigs, or ACAB.
All cops, it means all cops are bastards.
Yeah, all cops are bastards. ACAB. But this is how the Russian media portrays it, and so this is based off of a comic book series by the name Major Grom. And it's the first 2 books of the series, and Major Grom is basically just a detective in the St. Petersburg police force who, you know, is a loner. He does things on his own. He can't trust anybody.
He detects disloyal Soviet citizens.
Basically. But it's set in the modern day. And then essentially, Brendan, you'll see what happens, but this entity called the Plague Doctor comes into St. Petersburg to wreak havoc. And only Major Grom can stop them. The comic book series is actually a really good series. And it has more of a anti-police thing. Or anti-government thing. Compared to the movie. Because the movie had to go through Ross Film. which is the Russia's state media movie thing. So essentially that. But we will go watch the movie and give you our commentary afterwards.
Mm-hmm. I'm going into this completely blind. I've never read the comic series. I've never seen the movie. I don't even know if this is... I guess Roberto's implied that this is post-Soviet, so there's that.
Yep.
I don't know if it's animated. I don't know if it's live action.
Well, I can tell you it's live action and it's set in the last few years because this movie came out like 2019.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I literally...
So we're reviewing contemporary Russian cinema now, I guess.
Yes. We're doing this because I wanted to do something to ease back into Patreon. We are trying to research Slavic gods, but the thing about researching Slavic gods is there's not much information out there because guess who did a very good job of purging all of that information? The Christians. So in the meantime, we will go watch the movie and we'll be right back.
So crack open, what is this? A zero sugar Dr. Pepper cream and soda.
Yes, because I have funny taste, so let's crack it open and let's begin. Oh, it's timed perfectly. With a clack. Okay, I'm stopping this now. Вместо тепла зелень стекла, вместо огня дым. И сетки календаря выхвачен день. Красное солнце сгорает дотла. День догорает с ним. На пылающий город падает тень. Okay, is this recording? Yes, it's recording. So, we are now back and from watching Major Grom, which was published in public...
It came out in
2021, not 2019. So, Brendan, thoughts?
I was really bored. I think probably the most interesting things it had to say about class and social media, I don't know how much I can comment in particular, you know, the particular dynamic here in Russia. But I will say this, the dude who made this clearly loves Fight Club. And I'm pretty sure what he did was he went to the movies one day, he saw Joker, and he was like, yeah, we're going to make this movie, but we're going to make it Russian. And that's how they came up with the plot of this movie.
Well, I would like to preface this with, this was a comic book series before Joker came out as a movie.
Yeah.
So, and they adapted the comic. So this is, Joker may have been copying the comic, because it was a pretty popular comic around the web, too. It even got translated into English.
But I would say it's 100% in the vein of movies like The Dark Knight Rises, Joker, and the new Batman movie, which I know came out after this, but it's feeling very samey. And I suppose the difference here is that all those three movies were actually good.
I don't know. I really enjoyed this movie. So that may just be your opinion, man. But I personally thought, you know, it had some good things to say about Russian culture itself, and especially kind of analyzing it from that format. And even then, for me, it was an entertaining movie. But I also just like these kinds of movies. I'm not as big of a, this isn't a good movie, as Brendan is, usually. So, this is a popcorn film. It's a popcorn film.
I was entertained. I was entertained for, like, the first part of the movie because it was fun. It was, you know, this cop like doing all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, running after a van in full sprint like, you know, a human being can actually do, being a gruff detective. It was all entertaining, but it was probably an hour too long. Like last night we watched Get Out is a perfectly put together movie. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's only about an hour and a half. It just gets to the point. It doesn't waste your time with all of this exposition. Now, sometimes movies can get away with being that long. Like, a similar movie was The Batman. It's literally almost 3 hours long. I'm pretty sure it's more than 3 hours long. But there's actually things happening in all of those 3 hours.
Well, I would beg to differ with that, because I thought Batman could have been an hour less. So
yeah, it could have been an hour or less, but I wasn't bored. I was entertained.
I mean, I was bored for after the first 2 hours. It just took too long to get to the point.
And you found the third act of the Batman boring, but you didn't find any of this boring.
No, absolutely not.
You're absolutely insane.
I am not insane. This was actually pretty entertaining for me the whole way through. But I'm also like, this is St. Petersburg. I love St. Petersburg. As if you look behind you, that literally have a map of the city.
But does it have an engagement with Russian culture beyond the fact that he eats shawarma all the time and it takes place? There's city skyline shots of St. Petersburg?
Yes, it does.
Okay, elaborate.
Essentially, so it does have a take on Russian culture, especially with kind of like the, because St. Petersburg isn't, because when you're in Russia, you hear a lot of St. Petersburg, you know, there's Russia, then there's St. Petersburg and Moscow. They're like different entities.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go through the city, this is very epitome of like St. Petersburg, like being the cultural capital where you can see all of these things. But of course, the movie doesn't go and take you through all of these sites, but they do show you the different places you can go to in the city. So like there's one shot where they go through the Peter and Paul Fortress. Mm-hmm. The movie starts up with, you know, them going through the Winter Palace Square, and then the palace that's across from it. And that's kind of like they have a scene there. So it's basically showing off the city, which is basically a very Petersburg thing to do. They just show you different shots. Because St. Petersburg is a very vain city because it was created artificially by a person. And we're going to talk all about that once we get to Peter the First.
Okay. So in other words, it's one of those movies where the city is a character in the movie.
The city is a character in the movie. Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing.
And then, if you notice, there's a few times in the movie where, especially when they're in the casino scene, mm-hmm. where Sergei Razumovsky, or whatever his name is.
Razumovsky. Yeah, Razumovsky.
Or Sergei. Just call him Sergei.
Yeah, just Sergei.
He essentially says, hey, you tore down this shack, you know, you tore down this historical landmark, and the old rich guy was like, it was just a shack, and I got through, you know, the permission, but it's like, no, it was still a historical landmark, and St. Petersburg... Mm-hmm. It's very big about preserving its like historical faces, but when you have all of these oligarchs and like mm-hmm. politicians coming in, they're essentially trying to destroy the city mm-hmm. for what it is, because they're trying to like, you know, impose their mark on the city, even though St. Petersburg has always been like, no, we're the historic city. Like, you can change the inside, but you cannot change the outside.
Well, I get that. My issue is I'm coming in as somebody who knows nothing about St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
It's James Bond. The James Bond movies do this all the time, or the Indiana Jones movies. It's a staple of these movies where a white guy goes to some sort of foreign location and he basks in how exotic it is. That's interesting because the audience is not familiar typically with this area, and oftentimes the quote unquote exoticness of it is exaggerated. But this is something like I would if I knew. If I had more background on Russian culture, or St. Petersburg in particular, I would probably enjoy this movie more. But I've also, like, I've watched a lot of foreign films. I watched a lot of foreign martial arts films. I don't know anything about Chinese culture, or I've watched Indonesian martial arts films. I don't know anything about Indonesian culture. But they're still entertaining to me. There was something there for the person who doesn't have the requisite background knowledge of a particular city or a particular thing. It's like the equivalent, it's like the city equivalent of, like, by now to enjoy all of the inside jokes and references in a Marvel movie, you have to see everyone before that. And it's too much investment for a viewer, and people don't know how to, I don't know. Studios like can bank on their audience knowing that, but in this case, it would not apply to like a foreigner coming into this movie totally blind. Unless you knew of St. Petersburg or Russia or Russian culture, I don't think you would enjoy it on that level.
I do want to also say that this is like one of those big Russian blockbusters that was made for Russians, because mm-hmm. the comic does have more of an international audience. But at the same time, it's a very Russian film, despite some of the things that it's showcasing. Mm-hmm. But it really does have a sense of, like, this is a pro-police film. This is a pro-don't-change-things film. This is a anti, like, free speech film.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I don't know. It depends on the angle you're taking at it. First off, I would say, like I said before, And I'm only saying this because I've seen movies besides Joker and Batman and The Dark Knight Rises.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah, I have. And constantly harping on those movies is kind of, I mean, it's cringe to me. Watch something besides Marvel movies, please. But I have seen all those movies and I enjoyed all of them. But, and this is something that the late anthropologist David Graeber wrote about in one of his, in an essay for The Baffler, I think. Let me see. Yeah, superposition. Yeah, basically, David Graeber's argument in that essay is that superheroes are inherently reactionary because every time there's somebody who's trying to change something. What the hell? Okay, I edited that out. Oh, okay. Why did that happen? That wasn't supposed to happen.
Call the cops by accident?
No, it's fine. Anyway, well, hopefully they don't show up. Anyway, I turned it off, like. Mm-hmm. Anyway, like I was saying, so Graeber's argument in superposition is that, for the listeners at home, I accidentally apparently set up like an SOS thing on my phone. I don't know how. Anyway, so Graeber's argument in superposition is every time you go to a movie, like, and he just saw, in the essay, he just saw on The Dark Knight Rises, every time somebody comes in that tries to change anything about the status quo, they're always a villain. And it's always the hero who's like, maybe you have a point, but I can't agree with your methods. And then sometimes they turn out to have been insincere the entire time. Like, so what basically what happens in this movie is there's this character called the Plague Doctor. The Plague Doctor is this villain. He's a serial killer, and he keeps going after rich people, and he makes these big dramatic speeches about, oh, you exploited the city, so now I am, you tear down the shack, so now I'm going to tear down your entire life.
Oh, very Italian of you.
Yeah. He, what, am I not supposed to spoil it?
No. The accent was Italian.
I guess, whatever. Anyway, and he has like a social media following, which is why I bring up the comparison with the Riddler in Batman, even though that movie came out later. I don't know how that works. But yeah, he posted on social media. And he gains this following, and it sort of mirrors the movie V for Vendetta, where, except this time, V for Vendetta is actually a bad guy, not a superhero overthrowing a fascist government. He's a villain that's killing rich people. And you're supposed to think, like, oh, well, he's got a point, but his methods are bad. It's like the kick the dog moment in every movie. And this just gets so obnoxious because it's clear how lazy film directors are getting, especially superhero film directors are getting, where they make their villain sympathetic as possible, and then they do something where they, like, set an orphanage on fire and lock the doors for no reason. It's totally out of character. It's like in Black Panther where Killmonger, like, he's like, yeah, no, you should have been giving weapons to black people all around the world the whole time so we could rise up against oppressive systems. It's like, yes, that's true, Killmonger. That's actually a great point. Why didn't Wakanda help the world? He says, then the sun will never set on the Wakandan Empire. He's like, oh, okay, no. He's actually just out for world domination.
Mm-hmm.
But they never present a systemic critique of the worldview of these villains beyond, your methods, you're going too far, Bane. You're going too far. Where's the trigger? And it's so obnoxious. And I see this in this movie. Major Grom, at the start of the movie, says the system is rotten because it literally starts out with a billionaire who kills a child by running her over. And he gets off on he doesn't even get an involuntary manslaughter charge.
And he does it on purpose, too.
Yeah, he does it on purpose. And Grom says this is an outrage of justice. I spent all this time catching this guy, and now you're just going to let him go because he's a billionaire's son. So this is the point where you say, oh, this is the point where Grom and Plague Doctor might actually agree, because they both agree that the system is rotten. And Grom, just like Plague Doctor, works outside the law all the time, even though he's a cop.
However, at the same time, I also see that Major Grom just kind of falls back into the system, where he's just like, well,
yeah,
I can't do anything bad, but I guess I'm going to have to follow whatever happens, even though I don't agree mm-hmm. with it. So I need to stay within the confines of the law
yeah.
and try to change it from the inside, even though he has no mm-hmm. actions. He's like, I'm just going to stop the guy who's killing people and then do nothing to attempt to change things on the inside.
Yeah, There's several tells throughout the movie where the director seems to be arguing that the violence that Sergei, aka the plague doctor, causes, and like this kid, this like sympathetic character that shows up, his name is Lyosha. He like joins the movement of people who wear plague doctor masks and riot in the streets. Like, again, like Joker, this is literally happens in Joker as well. It's implied that their actions are a symptom of a broken system. But Major Grom is still there to defend the system every time. It's not that he's pro-system, he's just anti-system. This is how you can, in Hollywood, get away with making blatant pro-state, pro-police propaganda without actually throwing a bone to people who criticize the system.
And you see this a lot with, like, many films, too, where, especially with vigilante films, it's like, the cop, there's a cop that'll work with the vigilante, mm-hmm. or the cop that works outside of the system but still gets results done, and he's the best cop on the team because he doesn't follow the rules.
Yeah, when the cop doesn't follow the rules, he's a badass, or it's even played for laughs. But when a villain doesn't follow the rules, it's never like, I'm just bending the rules a bit. It's always, no, I'm going straight to burning people alive or setting an orphanage on fire.
Well, luckily, Sergei didn't set an orphanage on fire because he was an orphan.
Yeah, he was an orphan. And again, this is literally a plot point in the Batman. The Riddler was an orphan who was a serial killer that targeted rich and powerful people.
So what I'm hearing is the Batman copied this film.
Yeah, probably the Batman ripped off this film. Who knows?
But at the same time, I also see that there's still Russian propaganda here at work, because mm-hmm. we mentioned a few times, like, this can't be real Russia, because people are actually protesting. Yeah. You know, they're actually doing things that the government wouldn't let them do normally, and especially in this day and age, where they mm-hmm. really can't, because, you could at least, like, form a mob. Now you can't even do that in Russia without getting shot.
Yeah, like I was saying, like, you can tell this movie is fictional because at the end the government reforms.
Yeah, there's like, they do like justice reforms to make sure that things work. I'm like, that's the biggest load of BS in the whole film. Like, I suspended my disbelief as much as possible, and they're like, and then the government's implementing justice reforms. I'm like, I would love to see the day that happens in Russia, but I can never see that happening here. But and it's even like, as I mentioned, like, there's pro police. Yeah. There's time and Major Grom. Oh yeah, before I continue on, like, there's even like, systematic racism in the film, because mm-hmm. you literally all the the few BIPOC characters that there are, you have the one black actor who's literally just
he has a bit part as a bank robber in like the first in the opening scene.
Yeah, and all he does is say amigo, and then says stuff in Russian.
Doesn't even make sense. Why is he saying amigo?
Because he's probably Cuban.
He's supposed to be Cuban?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I get it.
He's supposed to be Cuban, because that's mainly, they're either Cuban or they're from Africa. And it's how you see, Africans.
That's how you see every black person in Russia.
Yeah, basically. Either they're from Africa or they're Cuban. And then you have, your Asian characters who are either,
Chinese businessmen.
Chinese businessmen, or they're just service workers.
Yeah.
And then you have your, Southern, like, Northern Caucasus, or, like, just your, like, more Islamic characters, or, like...
Yeah, and he's a gangster.
Who's a hooligan who runs a bunch of other hooligans.
I'm pretty sure he was supposed to be a Chechen.
I think he is Chechen, yeah.
Yeah. That's the other thing, is another example of, like, it's good, vigilantism for me, but not for thee, is Grom has a Chechen bro who... runs a boxing gym or an MMA gym.
Or a fight club.
Yeah, or a fight club. And he, says, I turn a blind eye to your dirty business, so you can, so he can be an informant, basically.
And that's literally what the subtitle says he is. Because it never gives him a name, it just says informant.
Yeah, and then at the end of the movie, when, all of these, followers of the Plague Doctor... Like, it's literally like the end of V for Vendetta, where everyone rises up and they start marching. Or again, Joker, where there's a ton of protests and people are wearing clown masks. Here they wear play doctor masks. What ends up happening is they, riot, and they, of course, they're always targeting small businesses because, mm-hmm. And the Grom's favorite shawarma shop...
Gets attacked.
Gets, yeah, gets attacked, and then the informant comes by and he's like, no, listen, I'm the only one who can work outside the law here. We don't permit such hooliganism.
Yeah, we don't permit hooliganism in our block. Mm. And it's like, okay. Yeah.
They're like, they're drawing a distinction between orderly criminality and disorderly criminality.
Which is a huge thing in Russia, because you still have your, like, organized crime there. You know, you have, you know, the...
Yeah.
The Bratva and everything, you know, you if you're in the system, you know how it works, so you don't mess with the system. And right. then you have, you know, your random hooligans who commit random crimes and everything.
Yeah. And this brings me, like, to another, like, David Graeber essay. I forget which one. It was in the Utopia of Rules. But it was asking, in Greece, for example, at, you know, the height of its monetary crisis. I'm pretty sure it still has a monetary crisis. When there were protests on the street every single week, every single weekend. There ended up being a strange alliance between organized crime, the police, and fascist parties such as the Golden Dawn. And Graeber explains this. He says, well, these are all people who basically create their own law through violence. Police, of course, don't create their own law, but they enforce the law through violence, and the gangster is the man who makes his own law through violence. And so it's not at all surprising to me that this movie would simultaneously lionize organized crime, the police, and the state in the interest of capital, because they're all just want to do business. That's the thing.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois Burgundy.
Gamarjoba, my name is Roberto, and I would like to sincerely thank you for taking the time to check out my podcast, The History of Sakartvelo, Georgia. In all likelihood, I would venture to guess that you found us because you were searching for either podcasts, YouTube videos, blogs about the history of Georgia, or you're hearing this on another podcast, like this one. I'm both sorry and happy to report that this beautiful and fascinating country is, to my great surprise, criminally underrated in the history world. As of now, this is the only podcast I am aware of dedicated to the full history of a nation and a people that have served as the battleground for empires all throughout European and Asian history. But the land of the Kartveli is so much more than that. The birthplace of wine, the second Christian kingdom, the land of fantastic food, nearly superhuman dancers and musicians, and perhaps, most importantly, a people that have preserved their culture, pride, and independence after centuries of one conquest after another. Empires rise and fall, but Sakartvelo always seems to survive in the end. So, let us celebrate this beautiful land by coming with me on this journey from prehistory to the present day, right here at the History of Sakartvelo, Georgia. You can find us on Twitter at @history_Georgia. Sakartvelo is spelled Sakartvelo. Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
It's like, no, we keep us in our lane and let's make things, you know, let things stay the same. Excluding the justice reforms at the end. It's basically trying to, oh, you know, yes, this is bad and we recognize that, but, you know, we can't harm the rich people. It's because you want to prove a point. And it's like, well, then why don't you change the system to, like, make it so that these people aren't, that the everyday person isn't being victimized by these rich people in doing so. And that's the thing you can see here, too.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's also, in Major Grom, like, as much as I like the film, there's points in the film where you're just like, this is just kind of showing the abject, you know, use of money by all of these oligarchs who are just like, yeah, you know, we make this much money. We're just going to spend it on building this grand casino in the center of, you know, St. Petersburg in a historic area. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, be fine with it. And it's like, you know, this, for me, it was just infuriating kind of watching and seeing, you know, because it's like, it's very truthful to the fact that, yes, oligarchs do these things. And, you know, the everyday, you won't hear it in the news because, of course, the Russian media is going to quash it. But it's also very much a lived experience for many people in St. Petersburg and in Russia, where their towns and territories will be kind of destroyed just because, you know, somebody wants to form a new building. Like, it reminds me, when I was in St. Petersburg, there was this one historic building that got torn down just because somebody wanted to build a hotel there. They didn't even keep the facade. They just tore it down, despite it being, you know, a historic building that's been up since, like, the 1920s. And they're just like, yep, we're tearing it down, putting a hotel there, because we got some, you know, Chinese investors who want to build a hotel, but they don't want it to look like, you know, a different, same part of the city. And, like, part of St. Petersburg is literally how it managed to, like, survive, you know, a whole blockade by the Germans in World War II. And even, you know, the Sovietization of the country, and still managed to keep all its, like, you know, imperial facades and all that.
And there's another thing I want to point out, which is that, so again, at the start of the movie, this like billionaire's son, this oligarch's son, gets involuntary manslaughter charges dropped against him. Grom complains then, because this guy broke the law, and he got away with it because he's a billionaire's son. But the difference between him and the plague doctor, who is targeting rich people, the plague doctor is also targeting people who exploit and oppress working class people in Russia legally. By legally buying land, putting in a landfill, destroying communities. There was a moment where they go to this, you know, community, there's an open fish market, and people are saying, like, oh, what's that smell? And he's like, oh, it's the landfill down the road. And it's like, it's legal, perfectly legal, to destroy a community by building a landfill near it, if you can. And that is where Grom and Plague Doctor differ, because for Grom, as long as it's rich people doing it, well, as long as it's rich people outside the law, to him, that's unjust. But doing it inside the law, he's fine with it.
You know, and here's what I found
even funny. Even if he doesn't like it.
And here's what I found funny, because Plague Doctor, Sergei, he essentially said, yeah, I killed them, and then I bought these, and then I bought up the things that they were using to make them better, and then I'm going to create a new city in my image to take control of. And I'm like, you're okay. I'm like, okay, you know, yeah. I didn't agree with your actions, but you're trying to make the community better. And then you're like, yep, yeah, but then I'm going to destroy the city and make a new one. I'm like,
yeah.
And it's the same, and it kind of leads back to what you were saying earlier. Yeah. It's just this Killmonger moment where it's like, hey, I'm going to do this really cool thing. My actions up to it may have been bad, but here's how I want to improve things. And then, actually, I want to take control of everything. And I'm like, why? You know, you know, at that point, it's like, okay, sure, still go to prison for murder. But at the same time, it's like, if you still help the community, why not, like, help it? And why couldn't you just have bought it, you know, from under the people? I mean, sure, it still pays the oligarchs more money to use it for other nefarious purposes. But at least, you know, if you want to improve your community, you do things, you know, without killing people ahead of time. But that's, you know, then we wouldn't have a bad guy, of course.
Yeah, and this gets to, like, my biggest issue with the character of Plague Doctor Sergei Ravnovsky. So Sergei Ravnovsky is basically he's Russian Mark Zuckerberg. He, at the start of this movie, he says, "I believe in free speech. Therefore, we are going to create a social network where even I, because of one-way encryption, cannot actually look at your data." Grom doesn't like this, of course, because he says, "Well, you just gave a pulpit to a serial killer."
Well, actually, Sergei is based off of, what are the names? Pavel and Nikolai Durov, who founded Telegram, and VKontakte, which is the Russian Facebook. So that's who he's based off of. So it might look like it's the Russian Mark Zuckerberg, but it's actually based off of actual Russian people. And it also goes back to VKontakte and Telegram having that encryption. And then, you know, which is where they're getting the information from. But then, you know, the Russian government came in and was like, you need to give us access to this stuff.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like, And even then, you know, in regard to like free speech, you hear, you know, Igor Grom saying, hey, why would you give people the freedom to do whatever you want and not be able to control it? And then, you know, Sergei was like, oh, because then it wouldn't be really be free speech, would it? If I could just control whatever people post. And that kind of goes into like the whole like Russian control of the media. Because the Russians were like, yeah, you know, we need people to see what goes on at all times without any qualms. Like, yeah, no, we need control. And then, you know, you have Pavel Nikolai Durov in real life and Sergei Rozumovsky. He's like, no, we need to let people have that encryption so then their privacy won't be invaded. Of course, it then turns into, you know, the plague doctor's nefarious purposes for using it. But at the same time, it's like this very, hey, you know, you can do the things you want. You can stream movies, you can watch and listen to music, talk to your friends, post pictures, all for free. It's all this website about getting connecting people together. But of course, the moment that one guy uses it for evil, it's a, everyone turns up, you know, looks at it as it's just evil. And that's like part of my concern with it, because it's like, oh, you know, you're not trying to glorify the use of, you know, social media sites, because I hate social media. I use them all the time, but I still hate them. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you know, oh, because, you know, you have one guy who's a serial killer using social media. We can't have that freedom of speech. We need to control it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the propaganda just kind of trying to ensconce.
The Russian state commits more violence every day than any serial killer or terrorist in Russia could ever hope to accomplish. Ever. To compare the two is absolutely ridiculous. All Vladimir Putin has to do is one day decide he wants to invade Ukraine, and all of a sudden he's inflicting more violence and death and human misery than any random asshole with a bomb walking into an apartment building could ever hope to accomplish.
I don't think Putin would
There's only one soldier in the case of that suicide bomber. Putin has the entire army. It is far more preferable to allow that kind of content on Telegram than it is to let the Russian government control it.
No, I don't think Putin would ever invade Ukraine, of course.
Yeah, no, he would never do that.
He would never do that. Not at all.
But anyway, so what I was saying about, this is why I find like the ideology underlying this to be utterly incoherent. This Sergei Romanovsky guy is a tech billionaire. He's a Silicon Valley guy. And yet his whole thing is that he doesn't like rich people being exploited. Have you ever seen a Silicon Valley tech billionaire?
No.
They, for Christ's sake, none of them are... Jesus, you don't get it at all. You think these tech billionaires are against the police, against the state, against capital? You fucking moron. It's so totally incoherent. Utterly incoherent.
Wait, this is Patreon. No need to bleep.
These people have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, essentially, because this is the whole before Elon Musk just went haywire. Well, he's always been haywire, but
it's... I kind of agree with it in the sense that it's shitting on the techno-utopianism of people like Zuckerberg and Musk who think that their startup will solve all of the world's problems. When really, they're capitalists like anyone else. Their bottom line is making a quick buck. Like, their notion where their startup or whatever will solve some sort of world issue is a marketing tactic.
Yeah.
I don't care. I mean, I use these services. I use Facebook. I use Twitter. Even though I don't like Zuckerberg, I don't like Elon Musk. I used it. Just be honest about the fact why you want people to use your platform. It's not a town square. It's not total free speech. We've seen that from Elon Musk, considering who he bans and who he lets back on. Facebook has done way more to destabilize the world through misinformation and permitting genocidal rhetoric on its platform,
and it, you know, and it'll block somebody who posts something more factually true. But the moment you have somebody posting anti-Semitic BS or like just kind of like just actual BS, they don't get banned. You know, we don't see anything wrong with the guidelines. It's like
utterly useless. The moderation team at Facebook and Twitter are completely fucking useless.
And absolutely,
especially since Musk is actively undermining the moderation team's ability to do anything.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying I'm in favor of racism or hate speech on Twitter. I'm not. But I am saying I have an issue with the state stepping in and saying what is and isn't allowed. And moreover, I have an issue with, Twitter had like decent moderation before Musk. Now it's totally gutted. But in 2014, like Gamergate, when there was like mass harassment campaigns, that was when Twitter said, okay, we need to start actually stepping up moderation with regards to harassment, bullying, and hate speech. That was good. They got their shit together. But the fundamental issue with these platforms is all it takes is one rich asshole to buy it up, and all of that is undone.
No, absolutely. This is like, especially on Twitter, because I was like, oh, it's finally becoming not a cesspool. And they're like, yeah, we'll take Elon Musk's money. He's giving us way too much. And I'm like,
no, Twitter was already a shithole. The algorithm encourages conflict and division.
Well, I catered my wall or my Twitter feed to perfection, and then Elon Musk came in and changed shit. Mm-hmm. And now it's like I'm seeing people I don't follow.
Yeah, I seem to fucking recall muting that person.
Yeah, I'm like, I thought I muted this person. Yeah. I thought I blocked this person. I blocked Elon Musk. Went to go check. I'm like, why am I seeing his tweets again?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think one day it was just suggesting me all Nazi shit, and I was like, I mean, I follow a lot of far right figures on Twitter because I want to keep up with like what they're up to now, but like. I want to pick and choose when I see that shit.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, we're getting really far away from Major Grom.
So. It was totally incoherent that they cast this tech billionaire as like some sort of freedom fighter.
And he looked a lot like Jesse Eisenberg.
Get real. He did look like Jesse Eisenberg. That was the other thing. Everybody in here has anime hair. The red-haired girl has anime hair.
Julia,
yeah. She has literal anime hair. And I don't mean red haired as in ginger. I mean red haired as if she's dyed red. And it looks awful.
And like Sergei has like orange hair.
Yeah, Sergei has orange hair. He has the worst haircut I've ever seen. It's obscuring his face like he's L from Death Note.
And like he's like he's really emo with the haircut and
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like everybody has anime hair. I'm like, okay,
Igor doesn't. He says
Igor. That's because he's just a guy.
He's just wearing a cap the whole time.
He's just a gruff bro.
But I will say my favorite character in that whole movie was Dima Dubin, the sketch artist dude.
Yeah.
Like, he actually had, like, morals and ideals. And he's like, yeah, I still want to follow the letter of the law.
Yeah, that's why he's such a useless cop.
Yeah. Which is how they portray him. It's like, oh, he's trying to be, you know, he doesn't work outside the law. He doesn't try to, like, pressure people into doing things.
Oh, Grom, isn't the police brutality bad?
Shut up. It's like, oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, basically, he tries to, like, prove himself to Igor the whole time.
Yeah.
And Igor is just like, no, you're not acting outside the law like I would like you to. And, like, Dima's like, and it kind of really, it's a quick mention, but, like, Dima's a new guy on the force. He's still learning the ropes and everything. Uh-huh. So it's like, he's like, oh, yeah, trainee, here's your first day. So, like, people are already messing with him the first day. He's like, hey, touch the evidence. Like, Dora, are you touching the evidence? It was a joke. I'm like, you literally told him as his superior to touch it.
That's played for laughs. I don't really care about that.
Honestly. But at the same time, it was like, I just thought, okay, they're messing with Dima, and he's just trying to learn the ropes.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you know, mess with him once he's established. Don't mess with him right away. But then again, that's just me not hating groups in general.
It's newbie crushing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Or rookie crushing, whatever you call it. That, in summary, it's ideologically incoherent. Its ideology is incoherent with reality.
And it doesn't even reflect Russia in a modern sense. Because it's like, oh yeah, here's the ideology we want. But does this apply to actual Russia? No. The most sci-fi thing you have is just a plague doctor. Everything else is super hyper-realistic.
I kind of like that. It kind of reminded me of Hellboy, the Hellboy movies with Guillermo del Toro.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so in conclusion, it's ideologically incoherent. It does the exact same lazy thing where the villain has a point and then they set an orphanage on fire for no reason. Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to go on a rant about that. I just hate that trope so much.
That's the worst trope ever because it's like, okay, here are all these good ideals, but actually, people may actually agree with the villain if we keep it like this. So let's make them real bad. And that's like my least favorite thing. It's like, all right. That's like the whole like, hey.
Yeah, it is annoying, but I will say I think Black Panther handled that probably the best out of any like popcorn movie I've seen. At the end, T'Challa does open up Wakanda to the rest of the world. So he does sort of like acknowledge that Killmonger was right, to a degree. But yeah, anyway.
But Major Grom,
this movie, go watch V for Vendetta.
No, fuck Viva for Vendetta, because that was a bad movie.
No, that
watch
movie
this movie.
I would sell my mother into slavery for a movie called Viva for Vendetta too.
No.
That's a famous Zizek quote.
Oh, you weren't slurring enough for that, so.
Yeah. I would sell my mother into slavery for Viva for Vendetta too. and so on.
So, here's where Brendan and I differ, because I would still recommend this movie to people, because this is the fifth time I've watched it. So,
what?
Yeah, I've watched it 5 times now.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I have all the comics right there. Like, I like the series a lot.
Why do you always like boring movies?
I don't know, man. I enjoyed it. It wasn't boring to me. It's a good popcorn film, and I would say give it a try. If you don't like it after the first hour, turn it off. But I just enjoyed it. I was looking forward to it the whole time when trailers were coming out. But it's also, I feel like it's more of a Russian film than it is, like, an international film.
Yeah, it's certainly not a film for people who don't have the requisite background knowledge about Russia or St. Petersburg in particular.
Or if you haven't even read the comics, which they're in English, you can read them.
Yeah, I'll probably read the comics. They look fun.
Oh, they're great. And it's like, there's a few of them. There's like, you have the, there's Plague Doctors 2. There's like the Time of Ravens or St. Patrick's Day. There's a few of them. It's a lot of fun. You can find them pretty easily online.
Yeah. If any of the above tropes bother you about, previously mentioned tropes bother you about superhero movies like they bother me, I try to turn my brain off as much as possible when I'm watching these movies. But especially with like Joker and Batman coming out, where that's like the main point of the movie, it's getting more and more difficult to ignore.
It's one of those things where this is a popcorn movie, just kind of revel in the fighting scenes and like the shitty CGI.
It's every movie has a class analysis that is ultimately designed to take your anger and then box it away into some piece of entertainment. It's like Titanic. It's like James Cameron's Titanic. It's like, oh, what's the class analysis here? Rich people are boring and poor people are fun. That is the point of Titanic.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'd rather the Irish dancing in that scene seems way more chill.
And the waltzing and all that.
Then again, I do like dressing fancy and smoking cigarettes out of a cigarette holder.
Don't we all? But so I thank you guys for supporting us. And
yeah,
you know, if
thank you for listening to me lose my shit for, I don't know, what, 45 minutes now?
46, actually.
46 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to also, at this point, we're going to watch a Georgian documentary about the oligarchs and the only oligarch in Georgia and how he buys up a bunch of stuff.
Interesting.
So we could hear Brendan's thoughts on the Georgian oligarch. That'll come out after this, of course, because Brendan and I probably need to go eat now and take a break.
We need to make, like, Several gallons of Russian crab salad.
Yeah, we need to make enough for 30 people, so we have to go. We're going to eat dumplings and... Alrighty, so that's a dosvidaniya, tovarishi, from me.
And from me, volosh prozhdayet parazitov.
Bye-bye!
Later.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. but he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.